Hello and welcome to the Brand My Career podcast. I'm your host, Alex Cutterford, and I'm so glad you're joining me today. My goal is to help you take ownership of your career, find your people through personal branding and networking, and take career-enhancing action. Managing your life and career can be hard. That's why every fortnight I'll be releasing an episode where I interview a diverse range of guests that will help you find clarity and build confidence in your career. Let's get into it.
Well, hello and welcome back to another episode of Brand My Career. And today I'm lucky enough to have Casey on with me. And Casey is the Managing Director of My Design Education. So we've got pretty similar names, and I think we've got pretty similar interests as well. So I'm looking forward to having a really good chat with you.
Amazing. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. So I thought maybe to jump in, and before we really dig into what you're currently doing, would you maybe just want to share a bit about yourself and what's led you to what you're doing now?
Yeah, absolutely. So as a kid, I always wanted to be a teacher. I used to make my younger brother and my younger cousin attend my fake classes outside. We had a whiteboard and everything. So not that they loved it, I even made them homework, but there was always desire in me to teach as a kid. And so naturally, as I was moving through school, I was like, okay, I'm going to do either primary or high school teaching. Went into high school teaching. Didn't really love any of my subjects, just had really great teachers and always had this deep desire to like make a positive impact on people. That was kind of what drove me. And so went to uni, and I was always drawn to like schools that were challenging the status quo and doing things differently. Ended up teaching at a trade school to begin with. So was really loving seeing the connection between school and the workforce, but it was also making me sort of challenge mainstream education and think, well, hold on, are we actually really setting young people up for success to navigate and design their career? And so that led me to studying my grad cert in career development while teaching. I loved it. And the very first concept I was introduced to in that course was the idea of life design or career design, which stemmed from Stanford University. The idea that we are the designers of our career and life. And I loved it. I was hook, line and sinker. And so I kept teaching. And then about 6 months later, most synchronistic thing to ever happen. To this day, I'm sure there's more to come. I had someone who I went to high school with that I hadn't spoken to in years, reach out to me. She worked for HR for a school diocese that I was in. And she was like, hey, Kirstine, I know this is really random, but I've just seen this job role and I thought of you. And it was teacher of life design. And I was like, oh my goodness, A, I've never heard of this subject in school. It's definitely not mainstream. And B, it's like, it's the same concept that I absolutely loved at the start of this grad cert. And so the course was for year 7 to year 10 students. It was pioneered by a very visionary principal who carved out time for students to do a subject that was really focused on understanding their unique design so they could design their career and life. And it was a subject I was always meant to teach. And I loved it so much that I'm like, how do we get this into more schools? I kept hearing everyone being like, this is amazing. Why don't all schools have this? I wish I could go back to school and do this. So I was like, okay, there's an opportunity here. And that kind of led me to doing what I do now with My Design.
Yeah, so good. What are the core principles of life design and why are you so drawn to them?
Yeah, so I would say at the heart of it is it's an inside-out approach to career predominantly, but as our work has evolved, we've also seen that it's an inside-out approach to well-being. It's an inside-out approach to learning and performance as well. So inside-out is kind of the, philosophy, if you will. And then so how do we apply that? How do we actually apply an inside-out approach to career or an inside-out approach to learning and performance? It all starts with what we call the SIM framework. And so my business partner, who's a professional coach, he developed this within his coaching practice when he was predominantly working with people that were made redundant and try to navigate career transition. He realized they didn't understand what they were good at. They didn't understand what they really loved and what drove them. So he created this framework called the SIM. So if you've got a mobile phone, which I assume everybody does, probably listening to the podcast right now on it, you're going to have a SIM card in your phone with a unique identifier. That's why you get your phone calls and messages and I get mine. So we take that analogy of a unique SIM card and we apply it to ourselves. We are or unique individuals. And it's also an acronym. So it stands for our strengths, being our natural talents, gifts, abilities, our interests being the topics and activities that we love, that we're fascinated by, and then our motivation or our motivators, which is the things that really matter to us and drive us. So by unlocking and activating your SIM, that's where you're, I guess, leaning into that inside out approach. You go deeper, you can then use it to uncover your purpose, which is then the ultimate direction tool for career. So yeah, that's how you apply it. Inside out approach, SIM framework, and yeah, really just uniqueness and really appreciating that one person's, I guess, route to success or ideal career is going to look different to everyone else's. And one thing I used to say quite early on was there's no such thing as good and bad careers, because a good career to someone could be a terrible career to another person, depending on what their unique design is. So we've got to kind of stop labeling careers as good or bad, and rather what is going to align with you and allow you to bring your best self forward.
Yeah, absolutely. The motivation one, I think, is something that's interesting to me, because I think you often hear people talking about, like, oh, they've just got no motivation. And particularly when they're talking about young people and student school people, like, to sort of label them as, oh, they're not motivated, they're lazy and all this. But if you could actually understand what it is that motivates someone. I remember listening to someone who's talking about everyone is motivated by something. It's like, no, that teenager is motivated to sit on the couch and eat Doritos, you know? Like,
yeah.
So, like, how can we dive into that more and understand that better, and how we can understand other people's motivations?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great question. And I think, like, motivate, I always say this in workshops too, motivation is multifaceted. So I don't have the hack to being motivated 100% of the time. We are human. Our motivation is going to ebb and flow. And you know, things like your what you eat and your sleep and your training and all that, that all feeds into how motivated we feel too. But on a bit more of a, I guess, philosophical level, if you will, how do we hack our motivation? I guess it's really first and foremost understanding the difference between extrinsic motivation and intrinsic motivation. Both have a place. It's just that if we're only doing something because we either want the extrinsic reward, or more often than not in schools, we want to avoid the punishment, then that's not going to be a sustainable form of motivation, which is why, and I know it in my early days of teaching, I would use the chocolates, I would use the lollies to try and motivate my students to do their work in English or business services at the time. And it was hard work because, yeah, they would feel motivated for that sort of, you know, little block while they could potentially get a lolly or a chocolate, or potentially to avoid the consequence of a detention or me calling home, but it wasn't a sustainable form of motivation. So I guess understanding, am I being extrinsically driven, or am I trying to motivate my students or my employees extrinsically because it's never going to be sustainable? It's kind of like a spike of motivation and then it dips. Whereas intrinsic motivation, kind of like two core strategies for that, is actually doubling down on your interests. So that interest piece of the SIM really fuels it too. When we enjoy something, it's going to naturally create that energy and drive from within, but also understanding our values. And there are so many different ways that you can understand your values, but when you can understand your core, like, non-negotiables and align that with what you're doing, then that's going to create that intrinsic motivation more organically. And again, that's coming from within. But I think then also going back to, like, well, why am I not motivated, or, you know, why aren't my students motivated? I think when you apply this inside out approach, and this is kind of the well-being lens to it, if you can have compassion for yourself, if you're not, like, showing up in a way that's like, why is this person, like, killing it here and I'm really struggling? And then when you look at it and you'd be like, well, the thing that I'm doing actually doesn't activate my strengths, doesn't really interest me, and doesn't align with my motivators. So it makes sense that I'm feeling quite flat right now. So I think you can, yeah, understand how to use it to motivate you, but also give yourself compassion when you are feeling flat.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like, I know exactly when I'm doing something that I'm not motivated. Energy instantly leaves my body, and it's like you feel heavy, right? Like,
absolutely.
And then when you're motivated by something, you completely lose track of time. You just become completely absorbed.
Totally. That's flow state. isn't it? Yeah. And I think with the school system, and I mean, I think arguably a lot of people in their work environments too, I think they're so out of alignment with their SIM, out of alignment with their strengths, interests, motivators, that then they're just operating from this like real yet heavy state. And it's like really hard to shift that energy when you've kind of become so absorbed in it. And I guess it's just about making sure you're adding in those things in your day, even if for the main, if you can't change school, can't change work, what are those other things that really light you up? Allow that to kind of replenish your energy. So then you can start to look at how do I realign in other areas of my life that are zapping my motivation and energy.
Yeah, like if I was going to have a boring day, that's the day I should book a podcast interview in the morning. So I can have a really great chat with Casey, and then I go into the day feeling really energized and ready.
Great strategy. Yeah. And that's it. Like, I mean, I'd love to think we can get to a way of learning or working where we're in our zone of genius 100% of the time. Probably not realistic, but I think the more we can start to like increase our time and energy within that zone of genius, the better it's going to be, not just for us, but for everyone. I'm a huge believer that it's a win-win. When we're in our zone of genius, when we're lit up by what we're doing, that's when we do our best work. That's when we give the most to others. So I think it's having to let go of some conditioning around, oh, you know, the harder I like hustle and work at something that is really struggling and really depleting me, the better it's going to be for everyone. Actually the opposite. The more you're in your zone of genius and lit up, the better you're going to feel, the more energy you're going to have, the better impact you're going to have, the better performance. It's a win-win.
The having all of this awareness is so powerful, because even as you're just talking, it just makes me think, like, if you identified, say, I know I can sort of operate in my zone of genius for like 3 or 4 hours a day, and that's sort of my max before I'm then it's like, then you can actually schedule what is my most important work and most motivating work, and make sure you're doing that whilst you have that capacity for being in that zone. And then maybe in the afternoon or something, if you're sort of more of a slow mover in the afternoon, that's when you can go through emails and reply things. Don't burn all your energy when you're at your best doing sort of the more mundane components of your job.
Absolutely. And I think that comes back to, setting up your day, setting up your week, what rhythms work for you, what works best. I know for me, if I don't go to the gym in the morning or train in the morning, then I'm not going to operate as my best self throughout the day. And yes, that's the endorphins, like obviously of training. But for me in group training, it's the social connection that buzzes. I'm actually already tapping into my SIM at like 5 o'clock in the morning, which then sets me up for the rest of the day. But yes, it's just understanding how do I structure my day. And one of like my favorite quotes and my business partners as well is success leaves clues. So when you've had like a really epic day of work, like backwards map, okay, so what did I do either like in the morning, or how did I structure my day in order to like double down on that, figure out what your own rhythm or your own pattern is. And dare I say, there's connections to your strengths, interests and motivators in those successful days.
Was interested for you, so you've finished school, you've gone to university, and then you went back to the teacher. What was the biggest shock for you going back into the school as a teacher? And were you expecting it to feel in many ways similar to when you were a student?
Great question. So when I was at school, I feel like a lot of people in my grade went into teaching. And I think, I mean, there's a couple of reasons for that. I think people go into teaching because maybe they lack awareness around what other careers exist, and everyone knows teaching exists. But we also had so many great teachers at my school, and they just seemed to love life. So I think a lot of us were like, this looks amazing. They seem really happy and like good balance and all of it. And so, but I do remember my very first prac when I was at uni, which was a couple of years into my degree based on how it was structured. I didn't see many happy teachers around. And, you know, I thought maybe, okay, maybe it's just that school I was doing the prac at, but I kind of started to see a pattern that there maybe not so much, well, no, I'm going to be pretty transparent. I didn't really see many happy teachers. I saw a lot of teachers that were really drained and really exhausted and just like burnt out. And unfortunately, I like that was in 2017, 2018. I think it's only got worse. Like, and the challenge with how we work with schools is I can sense that energy when I go into a school or I work with a school. It's like, and it's not all schools, but a good majority of them, I come out feeling more drained because it's quite heavy. And this is no critique to teachers because I've got the biggest heart for teachers, It's tough. Like schools are tough places to work in at the moment. And so I think that probably was my biggest, shock when I started teaching.
Yeah, absolutely. Nothing but love for teachers from me as well, because I am well aware of the challenges that come with trying to work with so many young people at one time, particularly high school. You know, there's so much going on for a young person, and then you cram them all into a room together and see what happens.
It's a lot.
But why? That's also why I'm so passionate about the types of things that you're doing and the value you're adding in that space through my design education. So I was keen to sort of look at some of these things. You've got programs that you offer directly to young people, but you're also working with career advisors and teachers and empowering them and actually helping them understand their own SIMS and things like that.
Yeah.
How have you found that experience of like helping teachers actually identify their own strengths and interests and motivations?
Yeah, it's definitely been great, because at the end of the day, the best way to teach this work to young people or help them unlock their SIM is you have to have unlocked yours and embody this work. I know when I first started teaching it, I was just frothing all this stuff for myself and learning it. And so my now business partner was a professional coach that we worked with at that first school. And so I'd be asking him questions about strengths, about purpose. Like, I'd be absorbing this for me. So I can tell the difference between a teacher who's going to kill this subject and really rock it, and teachers that maybe not so much. And again, no critique to them. It probably just doesn't light them up. And just like any subject, your students are only ever going to match your level of enthusiasm, if that. So I can see the difference between, it's important to embody this work because students can pick up on that from the get-go. That's been one experience. The other piece, I guess, and this is a hard one, I think this is always going to be a wrestle of doing either anything, working with staff in any industry, is particularly in this inside-out approach, career design lens. It's like, what happens if they realize, like, I've just done my SIM and I'm in a job that doesn't align with me at all? The first principal of that school, who I now work closely with at another school, he was like, Kirstine, you've got to stop talking to teachers because they're going to start going and doing different things. So it's a wrestle, but you want people, the more aligned staff you have, the better your workplace, organization, school is going to be. And initially that might look like losing some staff, but that then creates space for more aligned staff to come in. So, I would say that's been my experience. It's really energizing to work with teachers who just get it. And I think to some degree this work, you need an openness to personal development and personal growth because it's got that like lens to it. So it's teachers that I guess have that interest area that really jam with it, and they're the ones that have the most impact on students. And quite often it's those teachers that'll be like, oh, you know, I just got a really good class, I'm really lucky. I go, no, like your students are picking up on the fact that you believe in this work, you're embodying it for yourself. That energy speaks, whether we realize it or not.
Yeah, absolutely. You can get two different kids based on two different classrooms. Yeah,
100%. Yeah. 100%. So that's our kind of extent. So on a more, I guess, partnership level, we work with a group of schools that are wanting to embed this work within the students' timetable. So that takes quite a level of criteria, like in order for them to be willing to invest, you know, the time in the timetable for students, staff to be able to do it. And it's got to be really, believed in by their leaders and by their principal and whatnot. So there are more sort of extensive partnerships, but then we know that that's not viable for a lot of schools. So we've realized, how do we work with other schools in more like accelerated ways? That's where our workshops come in. But I've just brought in a bit of work around careers advisors and a course for them, because they're kind of, again, heart goes out to them. They're like your lone wolves a lot of the time in schools. A lot of the time they're doing the careers advisor role whilst wearing many other hats as well. And, you know, they might have a meeting with a student in year 10, 11 or 12, whatever it might be, and a student's coming to them pretty much being like, can you sort my life out for me? And like, what's a careers advisor meant to do in that 20, 30 minute catch up? So I guess our vision is, we'd love to really support the work of careers advisors. Imagine if students could come to those meetings, armed with an awareness of their strengths, interests, motivators, a sense of direction or how they want to contribute, then like the careers advisor can do their thing. They've got the wealth of knowledge around career pathways and study pathways. If students can come to them armed with an awareness of who they are, it just means that they can do their work in a much more impactful way.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm all about resourcing and empowering career advisors because, yeah, otherwise it's going to be an uphill battle if you've got one person, 1,500 kids, probably half a teaching load.
Yeah, definitely.
So the workshop, so you look at unlocking my design my studies, and then mapping my career. So really covering off all of the different aspects for someone to step through and move through towards a career that's actually going to align with their sim.
Totally. So every like workshop has that unlocking sim component, again, because that's the, I guess, foundation of our work. And, you know, we've created a strengths awareness tool called the Strengths Profiles that we weave as our main sort of strengths-based tool there. And then we really try and target it around what are these decision points that students are going to have, whether it's, you know, choosing their electives when they're in year 8 going into year 9, whether it's choosing their senior subjects going into year 11 and 12, or whether it's looking at post-school pathways. So there's designing my studies one, particularly for year 10 students moving into senior years, has been really effective, because a lot of the time that's kind of the first career-ish conversation that young people are having. So it's good to sort of teach them this inside-out approach, have them apply it with a decision they're making right now, and then they've kind of got that skill set for when they're then moving into your post-school and whatnot too.
Okay, so here's the scenario. You've gone through school, you've done your study, you've ended up in a job. Mm-hmm. And now you're listening to this and starting to think, yeah, actually, I don't think this career is actually in line with my sim because I hate my job, or mm-hmm. I'm just really not motivated by my job. Where does that person go from there?
Yeah, awesome. Great question. I would say first and foremost, like, validate that it's okay to be feeling how you're feeling. Nobody's in a job for life anymore. So statistics, I think from McCrindle Research, 18 jobs across 6 careers. So we're going to be doing many things throughout our life. Next step, I would say, is when have you sat down, even if it's just for a couple of hours, to really tune into understanding your strengths, your interests, your motivators. And again, if you feel stuck with how to do that, that's okay, because that's a skill. As much as we're with ourselves all the time, we need to learn how to get to know ourselves. So I would say either engage with us, or there's plenty of strengths-based tools out there. Easiest trick in the book when it comes to strengths is actually to ask people that know you well. Have them reflect back, what do you think my strengths are? Because often it's other people that can see it more clearly than we can see it in ourselves. So I would do that. Interests, I'd be really looking at what are the topics that you love, and then what is it about those topics you love? Because it's easy to kind of go broad. Oh yeah, I like sport, or I like psychology. Like, what is it about it? Dig into it more. Technology is a good one. I've actually had someone else say this on a podcast interview. It's like, it's almost like your algorithm knows you better than you know yourself. So yeah, so see what's coming up in your algorithm. You know, you'll look at someone else's and their feed will be totally different. So pull out the pieces that, you know, I guess, what are the themes around what's coming up in your feed, because that says a lot about your interests. What are the activities that you love? That's another sort of thread. The other piece I would consider in the sort of interest side of it is, what are you curious about? It might not necessarily be something that you're like got a full-blown interest in, but what are you kind of having those little subtle nudges of curiosity around? Because often if you just nurture them a little bit, that's when they'll grow into interest. But so many people just kind of push them down, disregard them, and then they never kind of grow. So pay attention to your curiosities. And then motivation is, start to get clear on your values. So a really simple way to do that is jump online, grab a values list, and start to sift through, well, what are the words that jump out to me? They're all going to be good words. All the values are great words. But what are those ones that are like non-negotiables for you? And start to then look at, okay, now that you've got that awareness of your sim, and if you wanted to go even deeper, it's looking at, well, how do I want to contribute? What problems do I want to solve? If I am really interested in mental health, if that's come up in my interest circle, what are all the problems or challenges, or needs around mental health and like maybe how do I want to help that? And then once you've kind of got that awareness, inside out approach activated, then it's all about expanding your career horizons that will and looking for ways that you will be able to bring those elements of your sim alive. And here's the thing, I often think this, and I think it on behalf of a lot of people that are listening. Yeah, but Casey, what if like I've unlocked my sim and I've uncovered my purpose, but there are no jobs that are gonna align with my sim or purpose? That's where I love to throw a little bit of psychology in. And I'm not too sure if you're familiar with like the reticular activating system in our mind.
Explain it to me.
It's probably come up before. So basically in any given moment, we are absorbing like millions of pieces of information. And if our brain, like our conscious mind tried to process all of that, like our mind would like literally explode. So the reticular activating system, it's kind of like, imagine like you've got a bodyguard or a security guard at a club. It's determining what gets through because we can only process like, I think it's like 150 to 200 bits of information. That security guard, that bouncer, our reticular activating system is going to sift and sort and prioritize what gets through. And so what gets through is things that already kind of align with our beliefs. So if we've got limiting beliefs about ourselves, about others, about work, we need to address those because we're just going to look for evidence to verify those. Mm-hmm. Or it's going to prioritize information that is kind of at the forefront of our mind or our focus. And so the thread that I'll go with there, and a lot of coaches teach this, is if you are looking to buy a car, and finally, this is happening to me at the moment, I love these like Suzuki Jimmies. I've realized that that's the next car that I want. I am seeing that car everywhere now because my reticular activating system is scanning. Doesn't mean there's more Suzuki Jimmies on the road. It just means that I'm noticing them more. So to sort of put a bow on that and tie it all together, when you move through the process of unlocking your sim, uncovering your purpose, that is now at the forefront of your mind. So your reticular activating system is going to be scanning conversations, scanning things online and looking for jobs and career pathways that will allow you to bring that alive. If you haven't unlocked your sim, if you haven't uncovered your purpose, then there could be hundreds of jobs that align with you, but you're just not going to notice them because it's not at the forefront of your mind. So I love to like throw in that little bit of psychology there that you need to, even if when you start unlocking your sim and uncovering your purpose, you don't know how that can, you know, come alive in a career or whatnot, A, your reticular activating system hasn't been looking, and B, sometimes that's where the magic is. Like you just need to unlock what lights you up. And then kind of, if I put my spiritual lens on, let the universe do the rest. I could have never planned life design and this subject to happen. What I was doing before that, if success leaves clues, I was following my curiosities. I was, you know, finding areas that I'm interested in. I was starting to understand what wasn't aligning with me, because sometimes knowing what doesn't align with you is a great awareness point around what will. And then sometimes it's like, you know, things start to weave together in a beautiful way. But if you're not making any moves or not like taking the time or energy to get to know yourself or to do anything different, nothing's going to change. So I would say if you're stuck in your career, A, you're not the only one. B, you're not going to be in a job for life. We're all going to change. C, take the time to understand your strengths, interests, motivators, and on a deeper level, purpose and how you want to contribute.
That's really good. The curiosity piece, I just think, is so powerful because if you're in the mindset of, all right, like even if, say, you've just gone through some tasks of identifying your strengths and interest motivations, like you said, you get to the end of that and go, yeah, but there's nothing there that aligns with that because you've just created this little box of what it is. But that curiosity, when you just allow yourself to naturally explore things, and like you said, things just weave together, and it's when you look back and you realize, like for me personally, like I was a cabinet maker. I finished school in the end of year 10, moved from Bathurst to Canberra and did a cabinet making apprenticeship. It hadn't even crossed my mind to ever do anything different than a trade. Like I really didn't even think about it. It was just like this assumption that was built in me because I knew I wasn't good at school. And so, but then over time, and then I sort of gradually shifted into youth work. And but then I was doing that on the side of building. And then I was sort of like, oh, I want to get more into this, and sort of found some paid work in it. And then I sort of needed full-time work. And that's when the job came up that was looking for someone with trade experience and youth experience.
There you go.
And so I took an apprentice's mentor role. And then that move that finished and I moved into career development, fell in love with career development. And then I was managing programs funded by government. Then I was like, I'm really keen to understand what it looks like to work in government and see it from that angle. And so now working for the Department of Employment. And so, yeah, it all just weaves together and yet you don't set out to do that.
No, no. And I'm like, we all kind of want a five-year plan, a career plan, because at the end of the day, that's providing a sense of safety and security, which is such a core driver for us. But it's like often we don't, my reframe for that is often we don't know the full plan because, and I don't know if we even want to, because then it takes the magic and the excitement out of it. Like if we knew exactly, if we could map out specifically what our aligned, you know, 5-year plan, 10-year plan is, it would take away the beauty and the journey of it. And I think it's like, how can we start to find safety in seeing the next 2 to 3 steps versus the next 2 to 3 years? Because that's what you did. You just kept following. The next step presented itself. And then once you took that step, the next step presented itself. So, and I think the more that people can hear examples of this, the more that they can be expanded, like, oh, it's actually safe and good for me to do that. Like, it's okay if I can't see exactly how this is going to pave the way, but either it will in a way that, you know, is going to be beautiful and aligned and whatnot, or it's going to give me the learning and the skills to make that next jump. So we're always getting something from our experiences, but you really used your curiosity as a guide. You were really clearly tuned into the things that you were curious about and interested in, and you followed those, and like, look at where that's led you. That's so cool.
Yeah, it's great. Casey, thank you so much for coming on and sharing all of those insights. I think that'll really help people, particularly if they're feeling like job sucking the life out of me. How can people find you? How can people get in touch and work with you?
Yeah, amazing. So My Design Education, it's at, on Instagram, it's at mydesign.education. If you jump on there, I manage that page, so feel free to reach out. LinkedIn is obviously a big one. You can find my personal profile on there or the My Design page. But yeah, as a good starter, we've got our strengths awareness tool that can be your first step. Jump in. We've created a tool that kind of doubles down as like a strengths archetype as well. I'm really good in terms of like understanding how to channel that into your career. So feel free to start with that.
Awesome. Thanks so much.
Amazing. Thanks so much, Alex.
Bye. Thanks so much for joining me today. Be sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode. And let's connect on LinkedIn so that we can keep the conversation going. Or head to my website and download my free resource, The Career Building Principles. Bye for now.